So for Don's new, but you know, we do a guided study of the big book here. And tonight we're covering some really important information. So I don't know how long it's going to take. I hope I'll leave some time for some comments. But we're on the third step on the Sunday night meeting. And we're on page 62, 60 to 62, page 63. We covered last week pages 60 to 62. So if you missed it, you can listen to the podcast. It's on the site experiencethebigbook.org, and you can hear it. After we cover the pages tonight, we're going to go through on Sunday nights the following the steps 4 through 12. And we're on the chapter called How It Works. It's read every meeting. How It Works covers steps 3 and 4. Into Action covers step 5 through 11. And the chapter Working with Others covers step 12. And so tonight we covered the paragraph on page 62 starting with selfishness. But I want to review on page 60, if you could all look at your book. Page 60. Sometimes I skip around, I don't say the pages, but we read this at every meeting. Mark read it beautifully tonight. It says, there are three pertinent ideas that they make clear. Now, I don't know if these ideas are clear to you, but it was clear to the people who wrote this book that they were alcoholic and they could not manage their own lives. It's true for me. It's true for me today. I can't manage my own life today. I need God to manage my life and follow His guidance. No human power can have relieved my alcoholism. That's true for me. That's why when I get up in the morning, I seek God and say the prayer, God, direct my thinking. Divorce it from selfish, dishonest, self-seeking motives. I know without God's power today and guidance, I'll make a mess of things. Now, God could and would, if He were sought, God could do what? He could relieve their alcoholism and would if He were sought. And it can be God can and will if I seek Him. And so, if you're new, are these three things true for you? Now, if you're new and you haven't studied the book, you get to page 60 to make clear those three pertinent ideas. They spend, on the first three ideas, they spend 58 pages plus doctor's opinion. And so that's why it's hard to start with how it works. You really need to start with the way the book's laid out. The book is laid out to cover the first two steps. Doctor's opinion is the problem. Bill's story describes the problem and the solution. There's a solution describes the solution that we got from Dr. Young, the spiritual solution. It also describes the problem again. And then More About Alcoholism tells us that without God, we'll drink again. And it describes the mental states that precede the drink and how no human power can relieve that. And once you're convinced of that, then they talk about a relationship with God and we agnostics. And that's the second step. And they ask you, can you believe that there's a power greater than yourself that can restore you to sanity? All you need to be is willing to believe it. It's not hard to do if you're completely defeated, to believe that there's a power greater than yourself. And if you don't know that, come to the meetings and you see it from people who it's happened to. And then we read How It Works, which is the preamble, which describes the program of recovery. And now they want us being convinced. It says we were at step 3. Does everybody see that on page 60? Yes. We were at step 3 in italics. And it says, we decided to turn my will and my life over to God as we understood Him. We went over that last week. Just what do we mean by that and just what do we do? Well, they're going to tell you what they mean and they tell you what they do, which is the rest of the steps. And it says the first requirement, so there's a requirement if I'm going to make this decision, is I have to be convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success. Now, if you look at this chart here, it shows God, self-will, and God's will. And self-will is where I've blocked God out. You see there's black around God. Mm-hmm. And I'm satisfying the three instincts of life, sex, social, and security instincts through self. And when I do that, I have fear, guilt, remorse, and resentment. And then I have conflict with everyone in the world. You see that?
Yes.
It's not a pretty picture, but this is what my life looked like when I came here. This is what my life run on self-will, where I blocked God out. I was in charge of my life. And then we have God's will, and there is no fear, guilt, remorse, and resentment. We satisfy our three instincts, and we're in harmony with the world. And so this is, they want you to be convinced in the beginning that your life run on self-will cannot work. And now all we're going to do in step three is make a decision to put God in the center. So now we're going to go to page, and then they spend two pages describing what a life run on self-will looks like. And we read that last week. And I want to pick up with selfishness, self-centeredness. Everybody see that on page 62? Anybody read this before? Anybody thinks it makes sense? Well, let's see if we can see something new, if we can see something new in it. Selfishness, self-centeredness. Everything is centered on me. It's centered on what I want, what I think I need to be happy. It's all my old ideas are how I see the world through my self-centered eyes. It says that they thought was the root of their troubles. Now, we all have troubles when we come in here, right? Anybody have a lot of troubles when you come in here?
Yes.
A lot of troubles. The root of it was my self-centeredness. The troubles was what I would see. But AA takes the troubles out there, and we go back to the root, the inventory, to find out what was wrong with us. And the root of all of it was me. I was driven. I was never in control of my life. I was driven by fear. Anybody else driven by fear? Fear drove me. I made all my decisions based on fear. Self-delusion. I deluded myself about my motives. I deluded myself about what I needed to be happy. I deluded myself into thinking that I was God in control of my life. So many self-delusions. The one I really liked is the one on page 61, the first full paragraph. There's a bunch of questions in that paragraph. It says, what is my basic trouble? Does everybody see that? And it says, wasn't I self-seeker when trying to be kind? Always seeking for self. But here's the thing that hit me. I was a victim. I was victimized by this delusion. It was a delusion that I could wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this life if only I managed well. It was such a delusion, but I didn't know any better. And so I wasn't a bad person. I had the wrong manager, me, and I had this delusion. And we just read Bill's story before the meeting, Rennie and I, and he had this delusion that if he was a success and he was a big shot, that he would be okay, he would feel okay. So I was in the delusion that if I made the world okay out there, I would be all right. And it never worked. So I was driven by fear, this delusion, driven by seeking for me, from others, and self-pity. I always felt sorry for myself when it didn't work out. They just didn't understand. And I stepped on the toes of fellows, and they retaliated. So I caused people to retaliate, but I couldn't even see it. We do a resentment inventory. For those who are new, in the fourth step, we look at everybody who we were ever angry at. And when we look at it, we look at the cause. And then we look how we were threatened in some way. And then we figure out, when we do this fourth column, that I made decisions and actions that caused them to actually do what they did. And so you can't see that when you come in here. And they retaliated. Sometimes they hurt me seemingly without provocation. What the hell is going on? Why are these people acting like this to me? Well, I invariably found that at some time in the past, and this is so true my whole life, I made decisions based on self. Now, somebody asked me what self is. Self is my thinking of what I wanted or needed to be happy. How I would have to manage the world so I would be okay. It was my thoughts on what would make things right for me. It was my thoughts on how others should behave and how I should be treated and how people should think of me. And I spent a lot of time getting upset at people who I thought didn't like me, and I don't even know if that's true or not. Did anybody see how preposterous that is? Anybody else ever do that? You get angry at somebody, you don't think they like you, but they've never said a word to you. I was the only one, but we really had these decisions based on self, which put me in a position to be hurt. It's the story of my life. Now, if you're new, you can't see that without doing the fourth step. But when you come in here, everybody who comes in here has a story. And it makes sense to the person who tells it. It makes perfect sense. And they describe everything out there that caused them to get here. And you say, oh my God, I would have dragged too. But the thing is, it's a fantasy. It's not even true. It's something we've created. It's a world that we've created, and it's not even true. And so we see that in the fourth step. We see how our self-centeredness caused us to do things that harmed ourselves and others. And once we realize that, we look at it, and we share it with someone else, we don't want to be that person anymore. And we just spent, 4 or 5 weeks on steps 6 and 7 on how we practice to change our personality. So that I won't make decisions based on self anymore, I make decisions based on God's will for me and guidance. So my troubles, here's the word troubles again. My troubles, I think, are basically of my own making. So does anybody think that's true? I can see it now. My troubles today are my own making, if I insist on it. My troubles are basically my own making. Now, that's a great promise, because if it was them, I can't change them. But if it's me, I can change my personality. And that's what they say is the solution, the spiritual awakening, is a personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism. And if I can change my personality, then I won't react the same way, and I won't have troubles. The other thing is, you can look at this, troubles are basically my own making. I can do that when I decide I have a trouble. Who's the only person that can decide something's good or bad? Is me. And it may not be good or bad, it just is. So troubles is a way of, when you're self-centered, you can see trouble, whereas if you're God-centered, you can see a situation, and then with God's help, how you should react to it. There's a big difference. And if you react to it the way with peace and serenity, you can do the serenity prayer. If God gives you serenity, then you can see what you need to change or accept. It's just a situation. And it says, they arise out of me. They arise out of my personality. They arise out of my desires of self and what I needed to be happy. And the alcoholic is an extreme example, because everybody, I think, can be self-will. But we're an extreme example, not of only self-will, but self-will run riot. So think of it, we're like a riot, like these people who are protesting, and there's a riot out there, and it's our mind, and it's our self-will. And here's a point I don't know if you relate to, but I did. I usually didn't think so. I didn't know that when I came in here. I couldn't see it. And so the book is really telling us about our spiritual illness, about our real problem on page 62, because they want you convinced of those three things to be get ready to see the truth about this. Does this make sense? And once you see this, then you're going to want to make the decision. So it says, above everything. Now, I'm trying to remember what could be above everything. Well, nothing, above everything. So what are they telling me? They're telling me I must get rid of the selfishness. Above everything. This is my problem. It's the root of all my troubles. I must be rid of the self-centered thinking. Does anybody think that's a good idea? Good. And it says, we must, or it's going to kill me. There's no subtle hints here. If we don't change the way we live and think and act, nothing's going to change, and we'll drink. We drink because of our selfishness. We can't live sober in peace and serenity, and alcohol was a solution to the spiritual malady of a self-centered life. And that's why sober is when alcoholism strikes. Because what happens after we drink is the result of the alcohol going in our body. But we're sober, we're left with our spiritual malady, our self-centeredness, and we can't live sober without drinking. That's why it's going to kill me. Now, you may not drink and be self-centered and still die, because you're going to die spiritually and you won't have any peace or serenity. And it says, I must. It tells me, I must. It's going to kill me above everything. Now, here's the key words here. God makes that possible. God makes it possible. Now, there's two terms there. I saw something new today. Everybody agrees God makes it possible. Everybody agree to that?
Yes.
Of course. But I have to allow God to make it possible. I have to be willing to let go of my old ideas. I have to be willing to let go of the way I see things so God can change me. God makes it possible, but I have to prepare and let go so God can come in and direct. And so God makes it possible, but God won't do it unless we let him. So all we have to do is be willing to let God do it and change our mind and change the way we see things. It says there's no way of entirely getting rid of self. I can't get rid of my self-centeredness because it's the way I think. I had a self-centered mind. I couldn't fix my mind with myself. I couldn't stop doing it. Well, I would try. I'd say, I'm going to do better. I'm going to be kind and loving. And then an hour later, I'm all worked up about something. You can't get rid of self without his aid. Now notice the word, God makes it possible and his aid. We still have our bodies and minds, but God is going to take care of them and change the way we see them if we let him. He's not going to take over our minds and our thoughts. We're not going to be robots. But as when we get out of self and are willing to let go, then God will come in and he will direct us. Now it said, I had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but I could not live up to them. I couldn't do it. I don't know about you, but I couldn't do it. I would try to do better. I'd say, I'm not going to get upset today. I'm not going to let this person bother me. I'm not going to change the way. I'm not going to be in conflict. I'm not going to react to anything. Well, it's hard not to do it. Why? Because that's the way we live. That's the way we saw things with our self-centered personalities. We'd still do it today, don't we? But we can stop now, and we have a spiritual exercises to get back to God directing us, and we don't have to react the way we did, and we don't have to act on their thinking, and we don't have to keep those thoughts. I couldn't reduce my self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on my own power. Now, why couldn't I reduce my self-centeredness by wishing or trying on my own power? Because lack of power was my dilemma. It was my problem. I didn't have a power by which I could live. Does anybody remember that in the big book on page 45? It says, lack of power, that is our dilemma. I have to find a power by which I can live. And so I want a new power to live. I couldn't live on my own power and treat my self-centeredness. It's not possible. So that's why we're going to make a decision now to change the way we think and the way we act. It says, I have to have God's help. So notice it says, aid, God makes it possible, and God's help. We're not struck down here and suddenly become these perfect God-centered beings that don't have any self-centered characteristics anymore. It just doesn't happen. We're still going to have the ability to separate from God, but we have the steps now to get back to God, and we don't have to act on our self-centeredness. We'll always have the ability to see things through self-centered eyes, but then we can stop now with the spiritual exercise of 10-11, and we don't have to act that way anymore. It says, I had to have God's help. Does anybody think that's a good idea?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Good. So now they're going to tell us the second requirement, the how and the why of this, of what we're doing. It says, the first thing you had to do was quit playing God. Now, we just described how it looked when you played God. Pages 60 to 62 are describing the actor on a stage running the play. And the actor is not the director. And so I was an actor on the stage running the play of life in front of me, and I had the script for everybody, but they didn't have the script. And it didn't go the way I wanted. I was playing God. Now, if you play God today in any area of your life, if you're managing any area of your life, it's not going to work. And you're going to have conflict in that area. And so how do you know if you're managing something and it should be God managing it and you're managing it? You're going to be afraid. Let's say you're worried about money. Well, you decide you're in charge of money. Well, you're going to be afraid you won't have enough money. And then you're going to take actions based on self to make sure you get enough money. And then it may not work out. And then you're going to get angry. You see how the spiral goes? So it says, I had to quit playing God. It didn't work. You have to be convinced that your playing God is never going to work. And then the rest of the steps are to look at how we stop playing God and how we changed the way we react to things. And it didn't work. It didn't work for several reasons, because I wasn't God. But I must have convinced myself that I had the power to manage the world well, or I wouldn't have tried. But you see, that was a delusion that I had. And I got it before I ever drank. I don't know about you, but my alcoholism started way before I had the first drink. When I drank, it relieved it. Because from an early age, I wanted approval. I wanted people to like me. And I think, how can I get approval? What do I have to need to do? And I started that running the rat in the wheel when I was 5, 6 years old. And it was never enough. It didn't work. So here's a decision you're making in the third step. It's very important. And it has to be made with the heart, not just intellectually. I'm going to make a decision that hereafter, in this drama of life — now drama of life can be the drama of life out there or the drama of life in my head. I don't know about you, but I can create a lot of drama just sitting in my house by myself. Anybody else do that? So it's just drama of life. And in the drama of life, even out there or in my head, God's going to be my director. He's going to direct my thinking. And if he directs my thinking, then my actions will change. So that's a decision I made. God is going to be my director. He's the principal. We hear his agents. Principal is like an insurance company. The agent sells the policies that the director gives them. So I'm going to be a servant of God. He's the father. I'm going to be God's child. Now, I like that image, because fathers take care of their children. And if God's my father and I'm his child, all I have to do is stay close to Dad and he'll take care of me. It says, and then the 23rd Psalm really addresses that. I really like the 23rd Psalm. It really talks about that, how God's our director. He takes care of us. And then it goes, most good ideas are simple. And this concept that God's going to be my director, he's going to be my father, I'm going to be a child, is the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which I pass to freedom. So here's this thing I got from the book, Steps We Took, and it shows this arch to freedom. Now, when I come in here, I'm not through the arch. I have to build the arch to step through it. It's like the door doesn't even appear till we start to do the steps. Does this make sense? And then it starts to appear. And as we see this foundation. Believing in the second step is the cornerstone. The keystone to the arch to freedom is this decision. And then notice the other steps lead to faith, and then we can walk through it. And this is what the program's all about. Do I want to walk through the arch to freedom, or do I want to stay in the bondage of self-will? And so that's a decision we're making in the third step, that God's going to be our director. Now, here comes the third step promises. They're not read at any meetings, but they're very powerful. And I don't know how many there are. I forgot to count them. It says, when I sincerely took this position — and sincerely is a powerful word — when I sincerely took this position that God's going to be my director, all sorts of remarkable things followed. I have a new employer. Anybody think that's good? Who was my old employer? Me. I fired myself. I had a team that lost 162 games, and I was managing it. And I decided, you know what? I need a new manager. Now, I had lost 162 games for 10 years. It took me a long time to get to fire myself, do you see? But I had to fire myself. It can't be me. Then the other thing is, if I have a new employer, when I used to go to work, and like St. Francis would bother me, you know how it is, I'd say, well, you know, I don't work for them, I work for God. And who do I work for today? I work for God. And when I look at it that way, everything I do has to do with what's God's work for me each day. It's a whole different way of looking at things. So I have a new employer, that's a good promise. It's not me, and he's all powerful. So God is all powerful. That's a good employer. It's good to have an employer who's all powerful. Now, here's the contract we make with God when we take the third step. I'm making a contract that God will give me everything I need. Isn't that good? Now, the word need is different than want. That's where people get confused. And, oh, you know, God, it's not what I want, because I don't know what I want. I need. God knows what I need, and he'll give it to me. So I don't have to worry anymore about anything. So God now has worry. I have a contract with God. He has worry, and I don't have to worry, and he will give me everything I need, and here's what I have to do. I have to keep close to him and perform his work well. Now, the rest of the steps are how I get close to God and I do his work. That's all steps 4 through 9 are in 10, 11. How do I get close to God in 4 through 9? So 10, I'm with God in the fellowship of the Spirit. And then how do I do his work all day long using the steps 10 and 11 and 12? That's the deal. And it says, if I'm established on such a footing, so I have this contract and I'm established, I have a contract with God, and this is the footing that I've established on, then I'm going to be less interested in myself. Now, in the beginning, not much, but over time, you get more and more, you get away from your self-centered thoughts, never completely, don't get me wrong, we have to do this every day, but less interested in myself, my little plans. Anybody have little plans? We all had big plans, but now they can be little plans, and they can change in designs. More and more, this is a promise, I become interested in seeing what I could contribute to life. What can I do for other people? Remember at night in the 11th step, we inventory at night and it says, was I thinking of myself all the time or was I thinking of others? Was I thinking what I can contribute to life? That's every night we're supposed to review it. And what I can contribute to life, not get out of life. And the more I contribute to life, the more I get. The theme of the big book is what you bring into anything is what you get. You bring love, patience, tolerance, kindness into something, you're going to get it. You bring anger and fear, you're going to get it back. And so what do I bring? And then I get a new power flow in. I get some peace of mind. Why do I have peace of mind? Well, I'm not worried all the time. I'm not living in fear. And I discovered I can face life successfully. What does that mean? It means that no matter what situation comes up, I have a power with me to react to it. And I know that because when Curtis died, and I got that call at 7:30 in the morning, and I'm holding the phone, I'm downstairs in the lower level at the stairs. I could see the line. If I stay close to God and play the role he assigns, I can handle calamity with serenity. How'd that come in my mind? That was God. I'd been going to a lot of meetings when that happened. I could see it. I could see it. It was a promise. It doesn't mean your life's going to be successful. It means you can handle things successfully. You don't have to react the way you did. You can have something bad happen to you from somebody and you can smile or you can say, I understand you feel that way. But you can handle things differently. You can react differently. You have a power now. When I was self-centered, I didn't have a power to react differently. I didn't know how to. And I become conscious of his presence. We're beginning to get a conscious contact with God. We want to have a contact with the power. We don't want to be separated. We want to contact the power. It's like a magnet in a paperclip. When we came in, the paperclip was way out there. There's no power. As we work the steps, we're getting closer to the magnet. We're starting to get power. And the more you work the steps, the closer you get to the magnet. If you stop working the steps, you get further away. Now, how close do you have to get to that magnet to keep you from drinking? Think about it. And so you become conscious of his presence and you begin to lose fear. Isn't that a great promise? Mm-hmm. Why? I'm not alone anymore and I'm not in charge of the world. Today, my fear today, tomorrow, the hereafter, we're reborn. We're reborn in our minds. We have a new way of looking at the world. We're reborn because we have a new, we've put God and ourselves in order. God is God now and Michael is his servant. And when I do that and I keep that, these promises will come true. Now, the rest of the steps are designed to keep that relationship. And when we get out of that relationship, to get back into the relationship. So I think we're going to stop there. The next week, I'm going to go over the third step, prayer, what we all like, and how it means to me and how I see it now. And then we're going to look at what the four step is all about, and then we'll go through the four step in subsequent weeks. So I hope this was helpful, and we'll.
Just how simple might be some of this scene, but it's almost exactly what Jimmy said. You got to put your own legwork in, But my bridge broke down one day, and I loved it. And he was like,
give you a nice book.
You just have to do these verbs. He said, you got to admit something. You got to come to believe something. Third, it's not that hard, you know, make a decision. And I'm like, oh, I made a decision. I'm done with that. The decision's done. You know, and so he made these things sound so simple, but not easy, you know? And so I was really.